The Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129, presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. In this ordinary time, the time after Christmas and before we begin Lent, there's a lot going on in the world, obviously, as that's always the case. And it's a little bit of a downtime in the sense that there's nothing big to celebrate in terms of the church and religious services. But there's a lot going on in the world that we need to pay attention to. And so one of the things we're going to pay attention to today on Just Love is the fact that a lot of people in the world don't have enough to eat, that they're hungry, that they go to bed hungry. And, you know, we might think about the fact that there's a lot of starvation in different parts of the world. We talk about developing worlds in Asia, in Africa. And as tragic, as sad as it is, we might say, well, yeah, I guess we can expect there to be hunger there. But the reality is that even in a country like the United States, there is a tremendous amount of hunger in which millions of people periodically go to bed without enough food. They use a term called food insecurity, which to me is a little bit of a jargon term. It simply means that people don't have enough to eat and that they're not always sure where their food comes from. And the situation in the United States is such that not that the same person goes to bed hungry every night, although there are some people who are in that type of situation. But the situation is that people kind of run out of food. And that's why you have emergency food pantries, you have food programs, soup kitchens, so that when people run out of food, they can get a little help to get through the next few days, to get through the next week. So today we're going to talk about that. And it's a good time to talk about it because after the holidays, people kind of take a deep breath. And sometimes some of that generosity and wonderful spirit of giving that is so much part of the Thanksgiving Christmas time, you know, gets a little bit worn out. And we don't realize that the needs that we were so really, really compassionate about at Thanksgiving and Christmas, you know, go on in January, February, in those months when we don't have, big religious feasts to celebrate. So today we're going to speak with somebody from Bread for the World, and then we're going to speak for somebody from the Federation of Protestant Welfare Agencies. Bread for the World is Margaret Tran. We'll speak with her in a few minutes, who's working with us at Catholic Charities in trying to kind of raise awareness in our Catholic parishes about the need to raise that question of hunger. And then we're going to speak with Reverend Brady Fun, who is with the Federation of Protestant Welfare Agencies, and he's working with us on our Feeding Our Neighbor campaign this year. But so as we kind of are going to talk about food, I'll ask Tom if he's got any particular items that he wants to kind of bring to our attention as news items, Tom.
Sure, Monsignor. You know, one of the things you had mentioned, obviously, you know, we have a tremendous interest and concern about food today. You know, there was just recently a announcement put out from a group called Aid to the Church in Need, which is monitoring the situation in Syria. It's a Catholic Charities that helps work inside Syria. And, you know, the problem is that in Syria, as you know, there's many, many problems. But one of the things is that food is now becoming a weapon of war in that situation. Sadly, both the Assad government and rebel groups have been actively blocking humanitarian aid from getting to communities that need it. Just this past week, the United Nations has finally gotten food deliveries into a town called Madja, which is only about an hour outside of Damascus, Syria. So it really is, you know, not a remote town, but it has been kind of surrounded by government forces. It is a rebel-held town. And as of this week, it's a town of 42,000 people. 28 have currently died of hunger there. The United Nations has come in with 65 trucks, but the problem there is that there isn't enough food, there isn't enough medicine, and Madja is only one of many, many towns that are in similar situations where food is being used as a weapon. In fact, they're saying that probably about 4.5 million Syrians live in hard-to-reach areas. So it is something that unfortunately is being used. They're using food as a weapon of war. While 280,000 have been directly killed in the fighting there, over 350,000 Monsignor have died of either hunger-related causes, lack of medicine, or even lack of electricity. You know, we often think of Syria and the Middle East as being very warm, but in this situation, as you mentioned, in the wintertime, it actually gets below freezing there. And so in the evenings, when the electricity winds up going down, people wind up freezing to death. So I think it's important that we wind up keeping them in our prayers as well.
You know, that's, again, as I was talking about in the beginning, you know, I think in the United States, we kind of oftentimes have a little bit of a kind of a geocentric focus that we don't have as much an understanding what's going on in the rest of the world as we probably should, because we are global citizens. But I think, you know, our history is one where you got these two big bodies of water on different sides of the country, and there's been a tendency to kind of focus on our United States. And so, you know, when we look at Syria, we say, well, that's all the way over there. And but I also think we kind of think of Syria as probably not the most underdeveloped country in the world, but right now is going through tremendous crises in terms of the unrest, the violence, the number of migrating people who become refugees in other country. And again, one of the reasons why those type of things we kind of speak about as being so bad is because they just have so many spillover effects, that somebody's using food and withholding food as a weapon of war is something that is very, you know, very, very difficult, and certainly something that is really a very, very grave wrong to do that. So the people are even starving to death. So, you know what, Tom, I think we'll go to our first guest, who is Margaret Tran, who is a regional organizer of Bread for the World, which is an organization that, you know, raises voices to help our nations make the right decisions about ending hunger. So I'm delighted that Margaret Tran is with us. Margaret, thanks for joining us on Just Love.
Thank you, Monsignor. It's good to be here.
Great. So, Margaret, we both know a little bit about Bread for the World and the tremendous good that it is doing. Give our listeners just a little sense of how you wound up getting involved with Bread for the World, an organization that tries to raise awareness about hunger and get people to take action with regard to it. How'd you come to be involved with Bread for the World?
Sure. So I started at Bread about a year ago now, and I had heard about the organization through an environmental policy friend of mine. I went to the Duke Nicholas School of the Environment for Environmental Economics and Policy, and so a colleague of mine from there was telling me about some of the work that Bread has been doing. I've always been interested in environmental issues with a food perspective, and so it seemed like a really good fit, and I wanted to experience New York and see all the different groups here who are working on addressing food and hunger issues. So I saw the posting with Bread and working closely in partnership with Catholic Charities, and I was definitely excited about working more closely with Catholic Charities. My parents are actually South Vietnamese refugees who, when they came over to the U.S. after the Vietnam War, actually had a Catholic Charity sponsor help them adjust to life in America, such as looking for the right places to get food and doing paperwork, like getting your driver's license. And so it just seemed like a really great way to give back to an organization that really helped my family.
You know, Margaret, you pointed out something which I think people may or may not be aware of, that at the end of the Vietnamese War, when there was the fall of Saigon and there were a number of refugees that needed to kind of leave that violence, war-torn place, Catholic Charities was involved in kind of resettling a lot of the refugees from Vietnam in different parts of the country. So, Margaret, I wasn't aware of that, but that's a really kind of interesting connection. Where did your parents wind up being resettled? Which part of the United States did they go to?
We settled in Derby, Kansas, which is a suburb right outside of Wichita, and our sponsor was in the Wichita area as well. And so that's how we came to be in the middle of the country.
Well, you know, it's interesting. And again, for some of our listeners who are in all different parts of the country, it's interesting when you think about what's going on with immigrants and refugees. There's a little bit of a difference between immigrants and refugees from this perspective. Immigrants tend to come to the country because they come to make a better life. They come for oftentimes two main reasons, and sometimes the reasons are together. They come for jobs, for work, and they come to reunite with their families. And oftentimes, immigrants tend to kind of cluster where other immigrant groups from their own country came. So, you know, if you talk about Mexicans, if you talk about people from the Caribbean, if you talk about people from Northern Europe, if you talk about people from Asia, you probably can kind of figure out where you could make a bet. And you'd probably be right most of the time if you said, well, I bet you if this person came from this country, the odds are they might go there or there. So there's a grouping. But with refugees, sometimes it's a little bit different because refugees oftentimes are settled because they're fleeing and sometimes they don't have any connections to where they're going. And so they wind up in different parts of the country. And a lot of refugees did wind up in the Midwest, as your family did. And so, Margaret, is that where you grew up? You grew up in Derby, Kansas?
Yes. I lived there most of my life through high school and ended up going to University of Kansas for undergrad before I went to grad school at Duke.
So University of Kansas, how'd they do this year in the NCAA?
We're doing pretty well. We're number three in the country right now. There was a really big game against Oklahoma when KU was ranked number one and Oklahoma was number two, and ended up winning in triple overtime. So
Kansas won?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Kansas won. Okay. So that's pretty good. So Margaret, now that you've been working with Bread for the World, working with Catholic Charities for the past year, let our listeners know about the work that you've been doing. I know you've been involved in the letter writing stuff, and in fact, there's even a connection with the visit of Pope Francis.
Yes. So we launched our partnership by engaging Catholic parishes and organizations in the Archdiocese in Bread for the World's annual offering of letters campaign. Every year, people from all over the country write to Congress on a particular issue of hunger. And the point is to really have a big grassroots effort around this particular hunger issue to have a bigger voice in Congress. And so this past year, offering of letters, Feed Our Children, is about child hunger and specifically around the child nutrition bill that's reauthorized every 5 years. So specifically here in New York, you know, we had a goal to reach 20 different Catholic parishes and organizations and write 2,500 letters. We ended up surpassing that goal.
Yay! So you did better than goal. That's wonderful.
Yeah. It was great. We had 35 Catholic churches and organizations involved in writing letters, and they wrote 3,500 letters, which was really great in that first year. And when Pope Francis visited in September, we were lucky enough to have those letters blessed by him.
Okay, so we're speaking with Margaret Tran, who is the regional organizer of Bread for the World, and she's working on a project with Catholic Charities in New York in trying to raise the awareness of the extent of hunger, even in the United States, which maybe sometimes is hidden, and working with a number of parishes. Margaret just kind of told us that in the Archdiocese, we exceeded our goal by, 1,000 more letters than we were hoping to get from parishes, and parishes kind of on average produced 100 letters to kind of raise awareness about hunger. So Margaret, you want to tell our listeners a little bit of kind of the funny story about what was supposed to happen with the letters when Pope Francis came and what actually happened with the letters?
Certainly. So the original plan was we would have Pope Francis bless our letters before we sent those letters on to members of Congress and you know, the hope was that the members of Congress would be even more excited to get the letters after seeing that they were blessed by Pope Francis. However, our letters looked very nice in a basket on the stage with Pope Francis at Our Lady Queen of Angels School. And so the letters accidentally went with Pope Francis and the rest of the gifts presented to him. So even though the letters are with Pope Francis, we were able to print photos of the letters and Pope Francis blessing them and sent that on to members of Congress who were glad to receive them that
Margaret,
way.
That's a great story, because with all of this stuff, there's a lot of security, there's a lot of planning, there's a lot of kind of figuring out what's going where. And, you know, one of the things we felt that from the immigrants and refugees who got the opportunity to meet Pope Francis, that, you know, they'd like to present him a gift that was representative of who they were. So the kids who are the unaccompanied minor had formed a soccer league. So they gave him a soccer jersey and they gave him a soccer ball. Some of the day laborers that Catholic Charities was working with, a workers group, they gave him tools and a tool belt to indicate their work. Some mothers who actually sewed some of the embroidery for the altar linens to be used at his mass, they gave him that gift. And, you know, as with all immigrants and refugees, and Pope Francis spoke about this, how people should be faithful to their dreams, they put together a book of stories about their stories, their hopes, their dreams, and they gave that to him. And then what Margaret pointed out, so one of the things we also arranged was that on the little stage or the platform near where he was, we would display those gifts and also the letters there that could be blessed. And so what happened is when the people with Pope Francis kind of would gather everything up, the letters looked so nice, they looked like another one of the gifts. And so, as Margaret told us, the letters that were supposed to go to Congress actually went back with Pope Francis to Rome. But we communicated to Congress that these were the letters for them. So anyway, so it's kind of a nice story that they were blessed by Pope Francis, and ultimately, in a different way, their message got to Congress. So Margaret, so tell us a little bit about your work organizing in parishes, and tell us a little bit about what you did to organize there, and maybe something that was you came across that maybe you were a little surprised about that you weren't expecting in your organizing work with parishes.
So I approached parishes that have history of advocacy or show interest in addressing hunger with a food pantry. And we approached parishes in all different parts of the Archdiocese. And so I did a lot of traveling and got to become familiar with my surroundings in talking with these different parishes. And I think something that was really surprising was that some of the parishes that are really active and have a pantry, you know, definitely were interested and had not only their parishioners write letters and the volunteers of the pantry, but also the clients of the pantry. So really empowering those who are struggling with hunger to speak on behalf of themselves and their situations to address hunger through this policy. And so that was really exciting to empower those who are struggling and let them know that they can write to Congress and influence policy in that way. Another exciting thing was we had a lot of activity in Rockland County, and that was led a lot by a Catholic Charities executive director there, Martha Robles. She's definitely a firecracker. She's a mover and shaker in the community and was really able to get a lot of letters. Probably half of our letters actually came from Rockland County because of her great leadership and the leadership team there and making sure that different churches and organizations wrote to Congress. And so with all of this help, you know, that creates a bigger voice and is something that Congress frankly can't ignore when so many people are concerned about child hunger.
So, Margaret, we have people listening from throughout the country. They are in their own parishes, in different places. So if somebody kind of is listening to us and saying, you know, that's a good idea because we need to raise up the issue of hunger, how can somebody in their own parish who might be listening say, how could they do this? How would you suggest they go about organizing like a letter writing campaign or other ways to raise awareness about hunger?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would definitely encourage people to visit our website, which is bread.org. There's resources there about having your parish be a part of our offering of letters, as well as some of our other campaigns and some great handouts, some things we can even mail to you for free, like bulletin inserts about hunger and learning more about the issues. So I would definitely start there. And on the website, you'll also see my contact information as well as the contact information of a regional organizer who may be closer to you in the country and can help you get started.
Now, if you were, based upon your experience, if you could have done anything a little different, what might you have done different to be maybe even more successful than we were?
Well, I guess I would maybe make sure that we had some people on the ground and some of the other parts of the Archdiocese. I think there was a lot of action here in the city. Some of the more remote places that were hard to get to, you know, maybe we would have more people involved who are citizens of those communities, reach out to their parishes. Maybe we would see also if Pope Francis was willing to give back the letters, but I can't think of a better place to have them than with Pope Francis. So.
Hey, Margaret Tren, who is a regional organizer for Bread for the World, working in the New York metropolitan area and working with Catholic Charities in some of our parishes. We're delighted that you were with us and delighted with the success of the campaign and that you got the letters to be blessed by Pope Francis, and they're for safekeeping now. So, Margaret, thanks so much for being a guest with us on Just Love.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll kind of continue our conversation about raising our voice for justice, and we'll talk a little bit later on in the show with Reverend Bradley Funn, who is with the Federation of Protestant Welfare Agencies, one of the partners with our Feeding Our Neighbor campaign. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And if you do so, our world will be more just. It will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a minute or so on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. I built. Oh, baby, they're tumbling down. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church and the world. Just love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. We're speaking about hunger. We're speaking about the need for food for people to be nourished. And we're doing it in this time after Christmas when, you know, a lot of people maybe have a little bit of compassion fatigue. So in a little bit, we're going to be speaking about the Feeding Our Neighbor campaign that Catholic Charities is engaged in the New York metropolitan area to replenish food pantries. And we'll be speaking with Reverend Bradley Funn, who is one of our partners, the Federation of Protestant Welfare Agencies, to talk about that and, excuse me, a few other things. Tom, any more news that we got?
Sure, Monsignor. You know, one of the things that you and Margaret were talking about, or that Margaret had mentioned, that her parents came over as refugees to the United States back in the day. And I think it's important to remember that this past Sunday was a World Day of Migrants and Refugees, and that this year's theme is Migrants and Refugees Challenge Us, the Response of the Gospel. Pope Francis spoke a little bit about this this past weekend when he was talking about refugees and migrants, and he had mentioned that obviously migration continues to grow worldwide, and he mentioned how this can challenge traditional ways of life, but he urged us not to take the suffering of others for granted, and he stressed that migration movements are a structural reality of our world today. They're just happening, and that our priority at this time has to be to provide programs which address the causes of migration, as well as meeting the challenges that it entails, including its effect on the makeups of societies and peoples. So I think that that is, you know, something that we have to be certainly mindful of at this particular time. And interestingly enough, currently what's going on in a similar way is this week they're having the 45th annual World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. The World Economic Forum was founded back in 1971, and it's an international public-private cooperative that's committed to engaging business leaders, political leaders, academics, and others to shape the future of society. This year's theme at Davos is Mastering the Fourth Industrial Revolution, which they say has to do with technology and artificial intelligence and robotics. But one of the things they're going to address that reflects on what Pope Francis has said is what some of the global risks are. And one of the things that they mentioned, the number one global risk, actually, today, as reported at Davos, is the world migrant crisis. It's the single biggest risk in terms of the likelihood of happening. Again, they mentioned the 60 million displaced persons that are currently fleeing their place of origin in the world today. And that this is something they're going to be talking about. They say that's the most likely to happen. They say global climate change is another great risk that has potential, it's a greater risk for potential impact, but that the world migrant crisis is the one that we need to pay the most attention to.
So, and I think actually we're getting close to the first actual primary elections in the United States, the caucuses in Iowa and the primaries in New Hampshire, they're, you know, a month or so away. And actually, somebody just kind of reminded me, I heard it on this morning, I heard that we're about a year away from the election, the inauguration of the next president. After we go through all the elections, it's kind of this week in a year from now that the president will actually be inaugurated. And so I think, Tom, what you mentioned, because the issue of migrants, the issues of refugees has certainly been raised very, very strongly in the presidential campaigns. And, you know, I will not mention particular names of candidates, and because I am incredibly impressed by the ignorance that is expressed in so many different ways about so many different issues. I mean, and why do I call it ignorance? I call it ignorance is because the sound bites and the statements that are made and on a variety of topics have no relationship to reality. I mean, I don't care if somebody has a position or an opinion, But, you know, to talk about it in a way that has no basis in reality seems to me to be just ignorant of what's going on in the world. And again, I'm not picking on any particular candidates for that. There's enough of that going on that that is problematic. And again, one of the reasons why I raise that is because from our Catholic perspective, we believe in political debate. We believe in people participating in democracy. And with so many things we say we're in favor of as Catholics, we believe in it being done responsibly in a way that builds up, is that it advances debate about the common good. And we're not terribly in favor of stuff that is overly partisan, overly self-promoting, because we believe that politics is the art of trying to figure out how together we build a better society. And I think it will be clear to anybody who's listening is that when I say when you kind of criticize the present level of political debate, you are not taking a conservative, you're not taking a liberal point of view, you're not taking a Republican point of view, a Democratic point of view. You're just taking an observant view that the level of political debate is not very, very conducive to creating a common good. Now, I don't want to say everybody's equal, but all I want to say is that there's enough kind of lack of civility, lack of good debate, that it really is causing us problems of people in terms of trying to figure out how do we kind of build a better society in which there is justice and in which there is compassion. So, you know what I think we'll do? I think we'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll speak with Reverend Bradley Fun, who is with the Federation of Protestant Welfare Agencies. So I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a minute or two on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about various topics about what is going on in the world and how they deal with our Catholic vision of a world that should be more just and should be more compassionate. We're now in the time after Christmas, and we do have a little bit of maybe compassion fatigue when some of the generosity of people around Thanksgiving, around Christmas, maybe now gets a little bit duller. So that's why at Catholic Charities, we have engaged for the past 5 years in our Feeding Our Neighbor campaign around this time of the year in order to replenish the food pantries and the emergency food programs, soup kitchens that tend to run out of food around this time of the year after the holidays. And, you know, we kind of began it with some of our parishes and our schools, and it really was pretty successful because of the generosity of people. And then we've reached out in the past few years to our kind of faith-based neighbors and partners, the UJA Federation and the Federation of Protestant Welfare Agencies, and asked them to join in this campaign of feeding our neighbors to both raise awareness and to raise food to help our hungry neighbors. And so I'm delighted with those partnerships, and I'm delighted that we have as a guest on Just Love today, Reverend Brady Funn, who is the manager of the Faith-Based Initiatives Programs at the Federation of Protestant Welfare Agencies. Reverend Brady Funn, thank you for being a guest on Just Love.
You're welcome, Monsignor Sullivan. It's an honor to be a part of, to be on Just Love. Thank you for inviting me. And I want to give regards from our Executive Director, Jennifer Jones Austin, and all of the FPWA team. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being part of Feeding Our Neighbor. Now, I know that one of the things that the Federation of Protestant Welfare Agencies has done in the past 2 years is they've kind of organized kind of a little bit of a workshop or a conference in which people have kind of talked about the hunger needs and what was going on there, which just was within the past few days or so that conference was held, wasn't it?
Right, right. We had a New York Hunger Briefing here. Barbara Turk was here, who did an excellent job just laying out what the city is doing in terms of just trying to eliminate hunger in New York City. She is, and I have her title right here, she's the Director of Food Policy at the Office of the Deputy Mayor. And really enlightened us to a few things. You know, one of the things she talked about was that quite a few of the individuals who are part of the SNAP benefits program are working individuals, which really speaks to the fact that it's not just the homeless that are hungry, but it's also those individuals who are trying to make ends meet.
Well, you know, what we've discovered at Catholic Charities is that what you've talked about, that a lot of people who come to our food pantries actually are working people, that they are people who, you know, kind of can't make ends meet. And so that kind of fits in with what Barbara was talking about, that those using certain government programs also are working people.
Right, right, right. I mean, they definitely had some successes. She said 11,000 more senior citizens were able to participate with the program. You know, they had the robo call out. And the focus was really reducing the gap between SNAP eligibility and those SNAP participants. And that's one of the things that we are trying to do with our faith-based initiative is also help pastors and faith leaders become more aware of resources within the community, within the city. I pastor myself up in Yonkers, Bethany Amy Church. And
hey, you know, I grew up in Yonkers.
That's what I heard. We need to have lunch to talk about.
That's great. So tell me, where's your church and where's your congregation in Yonkers?
We're on 21 Ludlow Street, right off of South Broadway.
Okay. Know it well. Know it well. And actually, you know, I'll mention this, Reverend Funn. I mean, one of the realities that is in all parts of the country now, we always used to think that need and that poverty was really an urban inner city reality. But at least in the Northeast, and I suspect in other parts of the country, with housing costs and migration and all of that type of stuff, unfortunately, there's a lot of poverty, not merely in, you know, the center cities, but there's poverty in a lot of places. And so, you know, for our listeners throughout the country, Yonkers is one of the suburbs of New York City. And Yonkers is part of Westchester County. And boy, there are parts of Westchester County which are fairly well-to-do. And right. yet, there are also parts near where Reverend Fun's church is that there is a significant amount of poverty. And so that's one of the things that we need to keep in mind. And so, Reverend Fun, what are some of the things that you're doing to reach out to congregations to get them more involved?
Well, we have a wonderful program here at FPWA, our FSAP program, which is Emergency Food and Shelter Program,
right?
Run by one of our coordinators, Nakia Johnson. She does an outstanding job. We have about 40 churches that is part of the FSAP program, and some range from small churches to large churches like Bridge Street AME Church in Brooklyn. And what we're talking to the pastors and faith leaders about is, you know, thinking beyond Wednesday. I'll give you an example that we feed between 80 and 120 people in Yonkers every Wednesday. The challenge to the congregation, to those who run the food pantries, is that we're giving out meals. That's great. However, these individuals are still living on the bridges. They're still in shelters. And we're trying to get not just whether you have your food pantry on a Monday, Tuesday, Friday. Think beyond that day. What could we do to change the life of this individual? We're feeding them. That's great. But they still need clothes. They still need a job. You know, they still need shelter. So we're talking. We're starting to have dialogue with our FSAP 40 churches. And talk to the faith leaders to tell them what can we do. Because the reality is that a lot of faith leaders want to do more, but either they don't know how to do it or they really never thought about it. Some of the food pantries have been operating for 15 years, and they've been doing the same thing for 15 years, which is great, but we need to help try to eliminate poverty by helping these individuals, not just giving them a meal, but also trying to help improve their lifestyle. Can we teach them skills where they can get a job? You know, can we get them clothing? You know, so we're starting to have congregant members who work on these programs and pastors start to think beyond their pantry day.
Well, you know, we're speaking with Reverend Brady Fun, who is working on faith-based initiatives at the Federation of Protestant Welfare Agencies. He himself is a pastor of a congregation in Yonkers. And what we're speaking about is kind of food programs, and we're coming up to our Feeding Our Neighbor campaign in New York with Catholic Charities and our partners, Federation of Protestant Welfare Agencies, and with the UJA Federation. And we have some nice corporate partners, ShopRite, primarily in the suburbs of Hudson Valley, Goya Foods in New York City. So it's a real partnership to try to raise a million meals. But what Reverend Brady Fun is talking about, which I think is absolutely, you know, critical, is that it's got to be about more than merely kind of the emergency food. There are other needs that people have, and we kind of should try to be working with people to help them to kind of move forward in their lives. And so I'm delighted that's kind of a particular thing that you're looking at, because it's certainly something that we think with our food pantries is a critical component of those food pantries.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's so, you know, we really didn't I don't think we realize the magnitude of how many folks are hungry in New York. I was sharing with Tom yesterday that I was driving by a very popular food pantry in South Jamaica in Queens, where I grew up, one of the boroughs in New York City, and I was listening to the conversation, the dialogue. You know, I gave a few dollars to the folks, and they would actually talk about the schedule for the week. That First Presbyterian is serving this on Monday, on Tuesday, you know, St. John's Episcopal Church, and they had a schedule for the whole week of where they had to get meals,
yeah.
And they were very, very excited about that. But I started to think that we have to do more. That's why we're excited about the partnership with Catholic Charities and UJA, and even us. We in our last meeting, we started to talk about these things. You know, this can't be something that's seasonal, but we need to look at the entire year in terms of how we can impact the lives of the needy in New York City.
Well, one of the things that we have tried to do to some extent is to provide some kind of professional support, and technically the term is case management, for people who come to the food pantry so that we can kind of engage them to see if there are things that we could help them to move forward in their lives, because it's that's so important. Now, I do say sometimes when I've gone to some of our food pantries, and what you discovered is they'll say, you know, they're going to go here on Thursday and someplace else on Friday. One of the things been, and again, I think one of the things that is really important for us to realize is that people who are poor are people. And sometimes we kind of have all these stereotypes. Well, poor people oftentimes have really good taste. So I'll hear people online saying, hey, you know, the food in this other place, that's much better. So I'm going over there because they got a better meal than the other place. You hear that sometimes?
That is very true. No, you're right. You're right. This one has chicken cutlets, and you know, and you're right. And I like how you said that they are people, and that's one of the things that we are trying to help the faith community understand. You know, we have homeless in our congregation. I was a part of the Greater Allen Amey Cathedral in New York with Pastor Floyd H. Flake, and you know, I would talk to those individuals in the congregation who were homeless. And, you know, I think a lot of people would be surprised their backgrounds. There are individuals that have master's degrees, you know, individuals who at one time were earning close to six figures a year. And I think that the stigma that's on those who are homeless or those in the food pantries is that these individuals have always been poor, or they decided to have a lifestyle, and that's not true, you know. There are a lot of individuals that are coming into our churches and faith-based organizations every day that are 1 week away from being on a food pantry line, you know, 1 week away from being unemployed, you know. And I like how you say that people, they're human just as we are.
Yeah, one of our food pantries, which is kind of one of my favorite. It's actually not a food pantry. It's actually a soup kitchen. And I think most of our listeners are aware, food pantries, which are probably most of the emergency food programs throughout the country, are places where somebody comes in and they'll get a package of food, which maybe has, you know, 20, 30 meals in it, which they may not have, it depends, which they can take home and they can prepare in their own homes. And that's what probably most of our emergency food programs are. But there are also a fair number of programs that also provide a meal for people, and they come in and they can sit down, whether it's most times it's probably more in the middle of the day than other times. But we have one of those programs on one of the neighborhoods in New York City, which we always refer to as Meatloaf, because they have served meatloaf every Saturday as the noon meal for a few hundred people for 40 years. The meal has never varied. It's meatloaf. And I think if they varied it, they'd have an uprising, because everybody knows they got meatloaf.
That must be some very good meatloaf. That's actually one of my favorite meals. So
well, you know, I was down there. I was down there, you know, within the past few months, and you know, people outside. Well, we're going for the meatloaf, and you know, it's serious business when you're working with poor people. But if you don't see a little bit of the humor in it, and some of the things, you kind of don't realize the humanity of what's going on in these places. But
that's very true. Very true.
So give us a little bit more about, I know we talked about the food programs and some of that. Any other faith-based initiatives that you're working with with your congregations?
Well, I mean, before I get, there's one event that UJ and Catholic Charities is having on the on January 31st, which is Teenager Interfaith Dialogue. You know, I think that it's really, really important that we, you know, we bring youth from the Christian Church, from the AME Church there. Some of my leaders are going down, and I think that even some of the churches within the FSAT program, trying to get some of their youth to come as well. I think that what you guys have modeled at Catholic Charities and UJA, I think it would be inspiring to give individuals who have been running food pantries for years to see the work that you guys are doing, so that we can start to have dialogue to not only get in more involved in Feed Our Neighbors, but also getting a better understanding of there's more to it than just giving a meal. And I just really want to commend you you guys on that, and really use what you guys are doing as a model to other churches that we work with in the faith-based initiative. You know, some of the things that they're working on in the church and working with other pastors within the faith-based initiative is, you know, not just the leadership training, but also, you know, starting to get a better understanding of your congregation through demographics, you know, understanding that everybody is not, there's not a lot of middle-class folks who are coming to the churches now. There are a lot of individuals on programs, which means that your ministry has to shift. It has to change. You know, you might have to provide job readiness programs. You might have to provide more support, HIV programs, depending upon what the issues are within the congregation. And what we're trying to teach these congregations, Monsignor Sullivan, is that you survive by meeting the need of the people. You survive by meeting the need, and everything else will kind of take care of itself.
You know what, Reverend Brady Finn, that's a great way to end our conversation. If you reach out and pay attention to the needs of the people, then your congregation's going to flourish.
Right.
Hey,
right.
Thanks so much. I'm looking forward to kind of continuing our work with Feeding Our Neighbor with you, and maybe expanding that throughout the year so that we can kind of really carry out some of those things that we were just talking about. So, Reverend Brady Finn, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. He is the manager of faith-based initiative programs at the Federation of Protestant Welfare Agencies, one of our very valued partners in our Feeding Our Neighbor campaign in this time after Christmas to replenish our food pantry. So, Reverend Brady Finn, thanks again for being with us.
And thank you, Monsignor Sullivan. Thank you.
Okay. Hey, you know, Tom, you're going down to the to a social ministry meeting this weekend, aren't you?
Yes, I am, Monsignor. I'm going to go down to Washington, D.C., be part of the social ministry gathering, which is gathering of many of the folks that we deal with, the United States Conference of Bishops, Catholic Charities USA, CRS, the Roundtable. They're all going to wind up meeting together, talking about the things we talk about here on Just Love.
And basically, what we were just talking about with Reverend Brady Finn is that, you know, that the social ministry, and again, people know this, but it always helps to reiterate this, is that that this social ministry, this outreach to people, helping people, looking at needs, is essential to the gospel. It's part of what it means to be Catholic, what it means to be a community of faith. So it's not kind of like the icing after you do Mass or the icing after you read the Bible. It's really part of the stuff of being Christian or being Catholic. And so that's why we talk about it. That's why we have all these programs to try to put in reality that part of the gospel. Because if we don't do that part of the gospel, then we're leaving out an essential part of the mission of Jesus.
Absolutely, Monsignor. You know, and to me, it's very edifying when you go down there and you see all the people who really dedicate their lives to this mission. You leave energized. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. It's any particular theme this year?
This year's theme is going to be on the Year of Mercy. Okay. So we're going to be talking about what mercy looks like in action. So I'll be glad to update you when I get back, Monsignor. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Well, you know, we're looking forward to being updated on that. We're looking forward to our Feeding Our Neighbors campaign, and people throughout the United States have these various campaigns. So thank you for being with us on Just Love, and just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. Join us again next week on Just Love, the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.